Welcome to the Kibi meeting. Those of you that wish to make comments during the comment period on any of the agenda items, I hope that you found the, I think they're called colored purple. I'm not the best. That's the green cards there. Oh, I'm sorry. It's the purple cards. Yeah. And fill those out, please, and bring them up so we can have a record of those comments. Again, welcome to the EQB board meeting. I'll start with Kate over on my right for introductions.
Hi, I'm Kate Knuth, a citizen board member from New Brighton.
Ed Ellinger, Commissioner of Health.
Eric Tomlinson, citizen member from Roseville.
Dave Shad, Deputy Commissioner at DNR, sitting in for Commissioner Landwehr.
Kristen Weeks, Duncanson, citizen member from Southern Minnesota.
I'm John Langstein. I'm the Commissioner of the Pollution Control Agency.
I'm Leah Hedman. I'm an Assistant Attorney General, and I represent the EQB Board.
I'm Dave Fredrickson, Commissioner of Agriculture and Chair of the EQB Board.
I'm Bob Patton. I'm Executive Director of the EQB.
John Saxhaug, citizen member from Minneapolis.
I'm Brian Napstead, Chairman of Board of Water and Soil Resources.
And I'm Charlie Zelli, Commissioner of MnDOT.
And Mike Rothman, Commissioner of Department of Commerce.
And why don't we start over here with familiar faces and maybe identify yourself.
The audience?
Yes. This is a tradition here.
Yeah, we do that. I'm Scott Sestichek with Jordan Sands.
Nice to see you again, Scott.
See you.
Brett Skilbred, also with Jordan Sands.
Yeah. Eric Bryan with Bryan Rock Products.
Hi, Eric.
Abby Gordy, URS Corporation.
David Williams, I live in Fillmore County.
Dwayne Bakke, Fillmore County Commissioner.
Tom Cozzi, Fillmore County Commissioner.
Johanna Ruprecht, Land Stewardship Project. Amanda Graves, Houston County Protectors.
Becky Ball, Minnesota Department of Agriculture.
Anna Shannon Sherman, Department of Agriculture and Environmental Quality Board.
Ellen Anderson, Department of Agriculture, EQB and Governor's Office.
Meiser, EQB staff.
Heather Aaron, Department of Natural Resources.
Ray Curry, Department of Commerce, and Tech Services.
Travis Germanson, Board of Water and Soil Resources.
Werner Hobbit, the MPCA.
Paul Hartman, I'm here on behalf of Excel Energy.
Grant Stevenson, Excel Energy.
Jason Alcott,
Well, thank you. Thank you all for attending, and a particular warm welcome to our two students from the University of Minnesota Law School. Welcome. I hope that we can actually make this worth your while here today and that you actually learn something from the process. So, again, welcome to all of you. You have the agenda in front of you. I would entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
So move.
There's a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
There is a second. Is there further discussion on the motion to approve the agenda? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same sign. Motion carries. Let's go then to the February 20th, 2013 minutes. If you would prefer to have them read, I'll be happy to do that. Otherwise, I would entertain a motion to approve.
I move to approve the minutes.
Motion is to approve the minutes.
Second.
As prepared. There is a second. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. The motion carries. Thank you. Chair's report, I can report to you that we had a very successful event on Friday. Friday was our Environmental Congress. It was, you're going to get a little better update later, but we had something in excess of 350 to 60 people in attendance. We had breakout sessions that were very productive. We asked members of the breakout sessions to identify in one sentence they're high priority, and you can't believe how many semicolons they use. It was a whole new process. The sentences were like this long, but they were thought out, well thought out, and very productive, and I want to thank all of the commissioners that and citizen members that, and members of the board that took the time to participate in an all-day-long event. So thank you very much for that. We still have work to do. Anna and Ellen are in the process, and Julia in the process, and Kate and Jeff taking all of the comments that were brought forward and trying to coalesce those into some kind of an action item or action agenda. And so stay tuned. It should be interesting, and it should be fun. Let's see. Bob, I think I'll go directly to your executive director's report.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe the later in terms of summarizing what happened at the Congress was going to be covered now. So if Ellen wishes to come up, and Ellen and Anna, and just give a little overview of the Congress.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ellen Anderson, I don't really need to give a summary of it. I think Commissioner Fredrickson did a nice job of telling you the very short version of it. It was really successful, and we've gotten a lot of reports back from people that were very appreciative of the presentations, the speakers, the everything involved in it, and we're really glad that we did it and glad to have been part of it. So congratulations to everybody for all the work and the vision and the support to get this done. And we feel like I want to say now congratulations on the successful completion of Executive Order 1132. We're not totally done, but we're really, really close. So, and the Congress was really the last part of that. But what I wanted to do today, if I could, is just go through a couple of quick follow-up, I guess three to be exact, follow-up things I wanted to bring to your attention. And first, one thing we want to think about is trying to figure out how to acknowledge and thank all the staff that participated in this whole executive order process, because it's been going on for more than a year, and there's a lot of people put a lot of work in, and we've started to try to compile the names of everybody who played some part in it, and it's over 100 different staff people. Some of them only maybe helped for one day, and some of them put many hours in, so there's a real range, but it was the product of a lot of different people's hard work, dedication, and talent. So something to think about how we should acknowledge and thank them, besides just saying thank you to everybody again. So a couple quick items I wanted to mention. One is in terms of the wrap-up of the Congress. We sent evaluations out. I think they went out yesterday, so we'll be getting evaluations back from all the participants, we hope, and get some feedback, which we'd be happy to share with you in a couple weeks when it's all returned, and that will be instructive and valuable for us, I'm sure. We, as Commissioner Fredrickson mentioned, we do have a short list of priority issues that came out of the final session and the breakout difficult work that was done. But what we intend to do beyond that is to compile a short summary report of the Congress, and that will include the whole process of the Citizen Forum's compilation, which Kate Knuth presented. And we'll put that into a report, as well as going back to the moderators at these breakout sessions and the staff that were in each room and sort of putting together just a brief summary of what came out of those. So it's not as much input as we talked about with all the forums, but we just want some kind of a brief final report, which we'll be working on over the next month and have that available to post on the website and certainly to share with you all. Two other things I wanted to make sure board members are aware of in terms of follow-up, because these involve you all very closely. One is videotaping, and we had Commissioner Stein and others made a point at our last meeting of emphasizing the importance of being sure that we had a recorded record of the Congress. And we were able to, through a lot of effort, we were able to get four videographers from state agencies to film the whole thing. So all the plenary sessions as well as the breakout sessions. and they have over 15 hours of tape, and it will require many more hours than that to process it, edit it, and post it. And so I've been trying to get a lot of advice about where to go from here, and there's a couple of main options. One is to go back to those staff. There's a very limited cadre of videographers in state agencies that have the ability to do that work, and they're very overworked already. In fact, they said they had to, they had to add on to their overtime last week to be able to come to the Congress and participate in that all day. So it's a stretch. So either ask them to do this, which would be challenging and take a lot of time to get it done, or to go out for an RFP and pay someone to do that work. And talking this through with our DNR videographer, Dale Newton, it sounds like he thinks it would cost many thousands of dollars to have that done professionally by an outside company. Probably way more than we had been able to budget for. So my recommendation would actually be to ask the commissioners that have these able staff in their agencies to try to help us see if they can somehow get it done internally. But I don't know what that would take in terms of how long it would take and whether some of the budget that the EQB had authorized could help. But the videographers that we had were from MnDOT, PCA, and DNR, the four. And so if it's all right, I'd just kind of like to turn that back to those three agencies to see if you could put your heads together and see if there's a way to get this done internally. I know it's a lot, and everyone has put in a lot, but it's important to finish that and to provide that record for people who weren't able to attend. And I think everybody agrees that the content, we had so much talent in that room among the speakers and among the people in attendance. And I think I heard from so many people that the content of so many of the presentations was of a lot of value and could be used by Minnesotans for a lot of purposes. So we want to make that available to them if we can.
And so your ask would be to get some feedback from the commissioners that you... the departments that you commented earlier,
yeah.
John?
Sure. Mr. Chair, thank you. Yeah, I'm looking at Charlie, and he's nodding. And,
he nodded.
And I'm hiding.
At Dave, and he is stoically staring at his shoes. So the agencies will talk about it.
Thank
we'll
you.
We'll find, go back and check and see. Yep. Thank you, Ellen.
Let us know what's
thank
possible.
You very much.
I just
thank
wanted
you.
To point out how smooth Ellen was in that ask. Yeah, you do it publicly, so everyone is here witnessing it. Absolutely. Well done. Well done.
Well, thank you. We'll look forward to hearing.
I think the law students
goes.
Just learned something, right? How to get your way.
Yeah, I learned that all at the U of M Law.
That you did, yes.
Yeah, so. Great. And then the last thing, and this is really important, this is the follow-up. And I know we keep wanting this, saying this is the last step, and the Congress was almost the last step, but we do believe that, and we've talked about this several times, that it would be important for the EQB to do a follow-up workshop to really do the final work of taking all these good ideas, which are in a much smaller package. But
shorter sentences.
Shorter sentences, right. To remove some of those semicolons and come up with an actionable work plan for the EQB. And it sort of comes down to your opportunity to be proactive on some issues, which is what we've been talking about the EQB trying to be able to do for the last year, and to take on some issues proactively. The Governor's Institute on Community Design, as we've mentioned, is ready to go to help with that process. And just to remind you who they are, you know, this national organization that is primarily federally funded has worked with several other states. If you go on their website, there's testimonials from other states that are grateful for the help that they've gotten. What they do is they come to town and help governors and cabinets, governors' cabinets, work on topics chosen by you to help find practical solutions and for implementation of in issues in this area, of topical area. And as we see it, one of the great advantages to working with them is that they are free of charge to us. And they do all the planning, pretty much. And that is very attractive because we've been putting a lot of time and effort into this, and it would be great to have them come in and help do that, provide that support to us. So we have tentatively picked a date, May 2nd, which I apologize, not everybody seems to have open on their calendar, but the most board members we could get were available on that date. Anna is going to, or already did, put a tentative hold on all of your calendars. Can you do that with citizen members?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, you have their calendars too. Excellent. So May 2nd for sure, and then May 3rd maybe as a follow-up. So a couple of questions. One is just to make sure everybody's on board with this plan to move forward. They're lining up speakers, expert speakers to come, as we speak, to come help the EQB go through this process. So let us know if that date is absolutely impossible, and maybe it's far enough away that some people can adjust their schedules. We need to decide if one day or a day and a half is possible, because that's what their recommendation is, a day and a half to do the work initially, and then they would sort of spend the night, all night working through it and come back with recommendations the next day. And so their recommendation is to have a day and a half. That could be divided up into two different time periods. And we had talked about, Mr. Chair, about the opportunity to really have it be a retreat and go outside of St. Paul, maybe to a place like Camp Ripley or some beautiful place out of the city. But, of course, that makes the time commitment even harder. And so we just wanted to get your feedback about one day, 1.5 days in town, or out of town, or possibly a day in May and another day in June at different venues. If you have thoughts about that, or you want to follow up with
emails. You could think about that and maybe get back to Anna or Ellen or myself by email with some ideas that you might have, unless you have comments right now. Otherwise, I think just think about that and see what you would be able to work into your schedule.
But we will plan on, that sounds great, we will plan on going ahead with May 2nd as of now.
Okay. Anything else, Ellen? Anna?
All on the Congress. Thank you very much.
And thank both of you for your hard work and helping to facilitate the Congress. It was well done. Ed?
Hey, Mr. Chair, Ellen, I would suggest, you had said that, you know, developing a work plan should be the last thing that we need to do. I think that a year from now we should report back to all of the folks that were part of the regional meetings and came to the Congress to say, this is what we've done. This is what we heard, what we've worked on over this year, and report back, because I think it's a constituency that really is very supportive of environmental issues, and the more we can keep them engaged and let them know that we're continuing to think about their input and work on the things that they've talked about, it would do us well to do that.
Good point. Thank you, Ed. Yeah. Other comments? Mike?
Just a quick one, Mr. Chair. It kind of goes without saying, but it should be said, I think, that the event was absolutely phenomenal. And it was well done, organized, and kudos to you, Ellen, and Anna, for all the hard work and pulling together a great event. So just want to thank staff.
There sure was a lot of very positive comments about the youth portion of the event. That seemed to be overwhelmingly the most popular portion. So, Anna, congratulations on pulling that together. You did a great job.
Thank you. It wasn't me. It was them. They did great.
Aw, shucks. All right. Excellent. Other comments? If not, thank you both. And don't forget to, I don't know, we could send out a reminder to each of you to give some input on.
We'll do that.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Very good. Okay. Let's go then to the executive director's report. Yeah.
Ms. Anderson and I flipped for who would cover silica sand legislation, and Ellen won. And Ms. Anderson?
Yeah, thank you. I'm just going to give just a super brief summary of what's going on at the Capitol on silica sand as I know it, and I hope it's accurate. So I'm just going to briefly go through the different bills, because there's so There's a lot of bills that have been floated around and a number that have been introduced, but the main ones that I wanted to mention are Senator Schmidt. Well, the new – okay, let me start with the beginning. The first bill, the first major bill that you heard about was Senate File 786. Senator Schmidt introduced that, has gone through a couple of committees, and it, at this point it has in it a statewide moratorium on silica sand mining, a GEIS, and it creates a Southeast Minnesota Silica Sand Board. There's been a lot of press about that. So that one is has gone through some committees in the Senate and is not moving in the House. Then there's another bill that is basically similar in the House and Senate, if not close to identical at this point. Senator Schmidt, 1018, Senate File 1018, and Representative Hansen, House File 906. Those two match up. And those bills do a few things, and they relate to the EQB by and large. The EQB is required under these bills to set model standards for silica sand projects in consultation with local government. The EQB is to assemble a technical assistance team, which would consist of state agency staff as well as experts from the University of Minnesota or MNSCU. It says, the bills say that the local governments have to consider the advice coming from the technical assistance team. They don't have to follow it, but if they choose not to, they have to, I think, write findings of fact to justify that decision. And the EQB is to maintain a library of local ordinances and permits relating to this topic. The Senate bill that I just reviewed the Senate bill, and so there may be slight differences, but I believe that the latest version says the PCA is to do rules on particulate emissions, and the DNR is to do rules on mining reclamation for silica sand mines, and there's a blank appropriation to cover the costs of these things. And then there's a third kind of policy bill that's moving that I just wanted to let you know about, and this is Senator Schmidt, Senate File 796, which is the Game and Fish Bill, and it has a provision related to trout stream and groundwater protection related to silica sand projects. And the companion Game and Fish Bill in the House is House File 742, Representative Dill, which does not have this provision in it, but I think that this provision may be in Representative Hansen's House File 906 that I had previously mentioned, but I haven't gotten an updated engrossment. In any case, what's in the bill in the Senate side and I think in the House side, it says that there's no water appropriations permits allowed for sand processing or mining within 25 feet of the water table, I believe, or within 1 mile of any spring, groundwater seepage, fen, calcareous fen, or trout stream, something to that effect. That's a very brief summary of it. I'm leaving out a lot of the words, but that's the gist of it. And that bill did pass, I believe, out of committee last night. So then there's some budget and tax bills floating around, and the governor did issue his supplemental budget. Was that just a week ago now? Time is flying. And in the governor's supplemental budget, as you all know, the governor's original budget does provide for additional staffing for the EQB, but the supplemental budget added a silica sand mining technical assistance team appropriation, and this includes $1.9 million for that team, which would include EQB, PCA, DNR, MnDOT, Health, and Revenue. And we don't have details yet about how that would be split up or what type of how many staff that would be, et cetera. But it does come from fees on extraction and processing, and 25% of the fees collected go to counties that actually have that silica sand extraction and processing in those counties. And then the last thing I wanted to mention is that there are tax bills, of course, that impose new taxes or additional aggregate taxes on silica sand production, extraction, and I think processing. Senate File 1487 is Senator Schmidt's bill, and there is a House companion that was heard in the House, I think it was in the House Tax Committee last night, that's the same bill that basically imposes a dollar a ton tax on the industry extraction I believe it's on extraction. Sorry, I don't have a lot of details. This bill was just introduced today on the Senate side. But essentially, it's a per-ton tax, and it's the proceeds are divided between three agencies, MnDOT for roads and bridge impacts, a third to the DNR for critical habitat and groundwater protection, and a third to Bowser for wellhead protection for acquiring easements around wellheads to protect drinking water. So that bill has had one hearing in the House, and it was just introduced today in the Senate. So I know there will likely be other proposals related to increased taxes on the industry in the various tax committees that you'll be hearing more about in the coming weeks. But the second policy deadline in the House and Senate is 2 days from now, Friday. And then after that, more of the activity will move to the Senate and to the Finance and Tax Committees. So that's my very brief, quick summary.
Okay.
Any questions?
Any questions for Ellen regarding proposed legislation that's floating around at this point?
I should mention, one more thing, is that there has been a lot of debate in these committees about the EQB and the role of the EQB, and there have been amendments made in some of the rather hostile to the bill amendments that have tried to take the EQB out of the process of some of these new responsibilities. And those have all been defeated, and they've been defended by the author and by a majority of committee members to maintain the EQB's role moving forward. Of course, we don't know which of these bills will emerge at the end of the day, but there's been a pretty robust discussion about what's the role of the EQB in this process moving forward. All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Bob. Ellen. And Mr. Chair, final thing, Ellen mentioned the supplemental budget that came out last week, and I'm pleased to report that in there is $1 million for the biennium for the EQB, so $500,000 per year. So that's very encouraging.
It is.
So,
Mr. Chair and Bob, that's actually in the governor's original budget request. So not the supplemental budget, but the governor's original request was to fund EQB at that level for the biennium.
Okay. Apologize. Thanks.
Anything else?
Nope. That's it.
All right. Then let's move to item five, the eminent domain decision item. And maybe, Bob, I'll ask you to walk through that. I believe that's an actionable item at this point. Jeff will? Okay.
Jeff will report on that. Thank you.
We have a different resolution than the one that's in the packet, after finding a fact, right?
No, this is there was no.
All right. Okay. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Let's do this. Oh, there we go. Okay, slideshow. Supposed to be a little EQB logo right here. For some reason, it's not showing up, but don't feel bad. It's supposed to be there.
Mic on, Jeff.
Background.
Pull it a little closer.
Yeah, it's on.
It's gone.
Okay. Pull it closer.
Can you hear me now and all that sort of stuff? The Minnesota Statute 473H created the Metropolitan Agricultural Preserves Program to protect agricultural lands in the metropolitan area. Just sort of summarizing the statute, the pieces of it that are pertinent to us, if anybody's going to through eminent domain, remove some property from the an area that is enrolled in the Metropolitan Agricultural Preserves Program, they have to file a notice of intent with the Minnesota Environmental Quality Board. The EQB is supposed to review the proposed action to determine the effect on the preservation and enhancement of agriculture in the area. If the EQB finds that it will have an unreasonable effect, the EQB will issue an order to desist for an additional 60-day period. And during that 60 days, the EQB would hold a public hearing to look into the matter further. Ultimately, the EQB could suspend the eminent domain action for up to 1 year. That's about it. So really what we could do is delay this if we found some reason to do so. I thought I'd walk through just to let you know where we're at here. This is the metro area. The site is down here in Dakota County. Again, part of Dakota County with some of the townships shown. Vermilion Township is here. And here, of course, is the site. We're going to focus in a little more. This is the Vermilion Township future land use plan. The light green is guided for agriculture. It's pretty much the whole township. So this is the property that we're talking about, the property itself. The dotted area is outline property owned by this particular property owner by the name of Werner. And down in the corner down here, you can see this is the 15 acres that are being proposed for being taken through eminent domain by NSP. The next one I just thought I'd show you, sometimes handy to see an aerial photo to see what we're dealing with here. This is Highway 52 coming down here. Remember, it's down in Dakota Township. I didn't know how well this would show up. The purple crosshatched areas are areas that are enrolled within the Metropolitan Agricultural Preserve. So we can see that there's quite a bit of area that is actually enrolled in the preserve. Here's our site. This is the Werner property here, all four parcels that comprise about 240 acres, and here's more or less the 15 acres that would be taken. And this figure did come from NSP. And it shows the where the CapEx transmission line would go through. The reason they chose this is because it really is sort of an intersection of three different pieces of this whole transmission network in the area. So that's why they looked. This round area or oval area is their target area for where they wanted to locate this substation, and this site is the one that they chose. 86% of Vermilion Township is guided for agricultural use. Not really an awful lot more to say beyond that. Going to the findings and conclusions that are before you for action. How many findings we have? 15 or so. 12 findings, 4 conclusions. Really, the crux of it all is conclusions of law number 3 and 4, that the EQB concludes, based upon examination of the notice intent report therein, establishes that the action is consistent with the aims of the Metropolitan Agricultural Preserves, and that it concludes that there's no need to take further action. So as somebody sort of snickered at me, so we're taking action to take no more action. Yeah, well, that's pretty much the deal. We wanted to make sure that everybody knew that that was the decision. In the past, I'm told, one of these came around was 2005, and I think the board at that time just said, yeah, okay, and ignored it and didn't do anything. We thought it would be a better idea to actually
go on record,
take an action, go on record, say this is our decision, that it's fine, that we're not going to go any further with it. Then there's really no question of what happened. So that's what we're proposing. So I guess there would be 2 votes, one approving the findings, conclusions, and order, and then another one, the resolution directing the chair to sign the approved findings, conclusion, and order.
Okay. Thank you. Questions for Jeff? The site is to contain a substation, is that correct?
Right. Sorry, I left that out. Yeah, there would be an electrical substation built on that property.
Questions for Jeff? Hearing none, a motion then to approve findings of fact, which you should have in your packet, and conclusion of law.
Yeah, it's the resolution.
Order, or the resolution separate.
Yeah, the resolution adopts the findings of fact.
Okay, so you should have a resolution in front of you.
Mr. Chair, is that the Jeff? Was that the order you were you looking to have?
I thought
the
you were
order
talking about
resolution?
Two separate actions.
My understanding, the way it's always been done before, is you take two separate votes: one for the findings, conclusions, order. No, just for the resolution. This is a point of conclusion that we need to clean up. I apologize for that. So we have a little internal discussion to figure out.
Mr. Chair, the sample resolution that's before you, and I need to look at it, authorizes you to sign the adopted findings of fact, conclusions, and order. And it also approves the findings of facts, conclusions, and order. So what you're taking, the board is taking action on this resolution.
So we're taking action on both of your suggested actionable items. We're taking it as one.
Sounds good.
And then, pardon me? Yep, we do need a motion to accept the resolution of the Minnesota Environmental Quality Board.
I will make that motion, Mr. Chair.
A motion has been made. Is there a second?
Second.
There is a second. Is there further discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chair.
John.
Just noticing in the packet, too, Jeff, and just be clear that the board members understand that everybody who's commented on this has no comment. So the township board met and heard it. The Met Council reviewed it. The Department of Agriculture reviewed it. The entire world is apparently has no comment. So I just wanted to make that statement for the record that we'll be consistent with everyone else.
Thank you. Let me just, I don't believe you all have a copy of this, so if you bear with me, I'll read it. Resolution of the Minnesota Environmental Quality Board regarding the notice of intent to terminate enrollment status in the Metropolitan Agricultural Preserve for certain lands in Vermilion Township, Dakota County, by Northern States Power XL Energy for the purpose of an electrical substation site. Be it resolved that the Minnesota Environmental Quality Board approves and adopts a finding of fact, findings of fact, conclusions, and order that no further action is required on the notice of intent to terminate enrollment status in the Metropolitan Agricultural Preserve for certain lands in Vermilion Township, Dakota County, by Northern States Power Company, XL Energy, for the purpose of an electrical substation site, and be it further resolved that David J. Fredrickson, Chair of the Board, is authorized to sign the adopted findings of fact, conclusions, and order. That is the sum and substance of the resolution. We've had a motion. We've had a second. Is there further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Oop, I guess we need a roll call. Bob?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Duncanson?
Aye.
Commissioner Ellinger?
Aye.
Commissioner Fredrickson?
Aye.
Ms. Knuth?
Aye.
Commissioner Napstad?
Aye.
Commissioner Rothman?
Aye.
Mr. Saxog?
Aye.
Commissioner Stein?
Aye.
Mr. Tomlinson?
Aye.
Commissioner Zelli?
Aye.
Okay, that is 10 in favor.
All right, and the motion passes. Let's go then to item number 6 on our agenda, Fillmore, Houston, Winona County request for redesignation of RGU for environmental review. And before we move, I have an amendment to the finding of fact. It's finding of facts. And I can, finding of facts.
I have another copy here.
I have it right here, Bob. All right. And the first would be the proposed amendment to RGU redesignation findings, conclusions, and order would be to replace finding number 6. And finding number 6 reads, EQB staff has been in communication with Winona County staff about the requests from Fillmore and Houston County. I would move then that we replace item number 6 in findings with this statement. The EQB received a letter from Winona County dated March 16th stating the Winona County Board has also requested that the EQB consider the state serving as the responsible government unit for this EIS preparation. Mark, it's did I say 16? I'm sorry, March 13. Is there a second?
Second.
There is a second. Is there further discussion on the motion to amend the finding of facts? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion carries. There is another addition, and that is the finding of fact number 31, which reads, the EQB finds that by application of Minnesota Rule 4410.0500, subpart 1 and 5, local governments are commonly presumed to have greater responsibility for approving and greater expertise in analyzing potential impacts of non-metallic mineral mining projects that other units than other units of government. However, in this case, multiple projects are proposed in multiple counties that are phased actions. Based on Minnesota Rule 4410.1000, phased actions must be considered in total in preparing an EAW or an EIS. Additionally, state agencies may have greater expertise than local government in analyzing certain potential impacts. I would move that we amend finding number 31 in the eighth line after additionally insert Fillmore, Houston, and Winona counties have requested the EQB to redesignate RGU status to the state and. Is there a second?
Second.
There is a second. Is there discussion on the motion to amend the findings of fact? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion carries. So we have then in front of us the findings of fact, conclusion of law, and the order. Bob?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, board members. I'm going to be going through the briefing memo that was in your packet. I believe in the order in the packet, it appeared after the findings of fact and the resolution. So if you want to look for that and follow along. And I have on the screen a map that I believe that appeared at the end of that memo as well. And a map that our staff at the Department of Agriculture, GIS staff, put together compiling the mines that are in question in this request. This request initially came to us by a letter from the Fillmore County Board requesting that the board consider redesignating RGU status for mines that are within Fillmore County, Winona, Houston, and Winona counties to a state agency. They were faced with they had mines that were under consideration in Fillmore County and the other counties, and understood that the project proposer had wished to do a voluntary EIS to incorporate all or at least a number of the mines in those counties in a single EIS. The county expressed that it did not think it was going to be capable or the counties were – neither of the three counties were suited to be able to undertake being RGU for – a multi-county, multi-site EIS, and asked for redesignation by the EQB to a state agency. We've since received similar letters from Houston and Winona counties. So all three counties are now on record supporting the EQB changing the RGU status to a state agency. One of the things we did right initially in looking at this request was to look at, well, what are the projects that are involved here and what constitutes the project that would be under consideration? That seemed to be a germane question. And so in contacting the three counties, we understand or at least understood at the time that there are 11 mines in the three counties. And so you, on the first page of the memo, you can see there's a summary of the mines, the landowner names for those mines. These are all mines proposed by Minnesota Sands LLC. They are the project proposer, and they're proposed on different landowners' properties. And so going through the list, there in Fillmore County, there are the Boyum, Dabbleston, Kessler, and Wadowitz mines. Apologize if I'm not pronouncing names correctly. In Houston, there are a number of mines, the Erickson, Tostenson, Olson, Chapel, and Johnson mines. And then in Winona County are Dabbleston and Yoder. They're different. One Dabbleston is the Fillmore Dabbleston is the Ellis Dabbleston Trust, and the Winona Dabbleston is owned by Roger Dabbleston. And the acreages are shown on that table in the memo as well. Like I say, one of the first steps that we took was to examine what the nature of these mines, what's the nature of the projects that are before the board, and looking at the rules in regard to those, and we findings that pertain to this are findings 8 through 19 in the draft findings and conclusions and order. What we concluded in looking at these projects is that, first of all, established that Minnesota Sands LLC meets the definition of a proposer as it's defined in the rules. In looking at the projects meet the definition of a phased action. And phased action is defined in the rule as two or more projects to be undertaken by the same proposer that an RGU determines will have environmental effects on the same geographic area and are substantially certain to be undertaken sequentially over a limited period of time. And then, as phased actions, we established that the individual silica sand mines proposed by the same proposer in the three counties must be considered in total in an environmental review. And that's according to two different parts of, there are two different parts of the rules, one part pertaining to EAWs and one pertaining to EISs in 4410.1000 subpart 4 and 4410.2000 subpart 4. And those are referred to in findings 15 and 16. And so the implication is that all these mines need to be considered together. And these were initially, there was the proposer came forward to the counties to offer to do an EIS for these mines, which is appreciated and a considerable gesture. But the our analysis is that this is mandatory. This is a mandatory EIS because when you add the acreages together for the mines, they do exceed the threshold. They are a phased action, so they're treated as one action. And when you add them together, they exceed the mandatory threshold for an EIS. The other part of the findings, again, trying to define this project, has to do with related actions EIS. There's another provision in the rules that which is Minnesota Rule 4410.2000 subpart 5, and I'm going to read this. This is covered in finding of fact 17. States related actions EIS. An RGU may prepare a single EIS for independent projects with potential cumulative impacts on the same geographic area if the RGU determines that review can be accomplished in a more effective or efficient manner through a related actions EIS. A project must not be included in a related actions EIS if its inclusion would unreasonably delay review of the project compared to review of the project through an independent EIS. So with that caveat in the last part that that inclusion of the project must not cause unreasonable delay to a project, and it would have to do with what stage that project was in terms of its review. It really is up to the RGU, whether the RGU is local government in this case or state government, to when there are multiple projects that multiple independent projects that have effects on the cumulative impacts on the same geographic area, they can require those projects to be included. And that's something to bear in mind as we go forward, regardless of what action is taken today on the RGU status. The EIS going forward, the RGU really needs to consider what other projects in the area could be related actions and should be included in this EIS. So I just wanted to make sure that that's on everybody's radar screen, that this does not necessarily capture the full universe of projects that could potentially be included in the EIS. So that covers our analysis of what the project is, and then it really comes to the findings having to do with the matter before us, which is whether to redesignate. And the authority to redesignate is in 4410.500 subpart 6. And I'm trying to find the reference to that very quickly, which is?
Bottom finding of 26.
Thank you. Yes, subpart 6. And we've gone through this recently. We went through this last month, actually, in action to redesignate. So you're probably more than familiar with this, but for the members of the audience, the subpart 500 subpart 4410.500 overall has to do with just the procedures for determining what governmental unit does environmental review. And so there are procedures that are in subparts 1 through 5, but then we have subpart 6 that says, notwithstanding all that, the EQB may designate within 5 days of receipt of the completed data portions of an EAW a different RGU for the project if the EQB determines the designee has greater expertise in analyzing the potential impacts of the project. And what we stepped through with the findings, in 26 we established that as a matter of law. 26 and 27 and 28 really have to do with our jurisdiction to be able to do this. As the statute says, within 5 days of the EAW, and as we've encountered this in other cases, including last month with the Living Word Bible Camp, the where there is...
You want to get that, Bob?
Yeah. Might be somebody important.
Yeah.
Hang up.
In all cases, the EQB, as a practical matter, has redesignated before EAWs have been submitted, before data portions have been submitted, because there's no practical way for the EQB to take action within 5 days if somebody submitted, submitted 5 days. The board can't act that quickly. So in all cases, it's taken action where no EAW submittal has been made. So this provision is really pertinent to those mines where there has been no data submittal. So that's really what those findings are talking about. But then the rest of the story really has to do with the fact that these are connected actions, or I mean these are phased actions, and need to be considered all in one one environmental action and in environmental review document. And so that pulls all those minds together. The remaining findings have to do with subpart 6 in terms of expertise, and the request was, of course, for a state agency, and so the question is which state agency, and our analysis was that, well, first of all, whether the state over local, and one of the finding that actually was amended by Commissioner Chair Fredrickson's motion has to do that. That's kind of actually the longest finding I think in here. Has to do with explaining that local governments are presumed to be, in normal circumstances, in usual circumstances, the appropriate RGU for non-metallic mineral mining. However, this is a rather special set of circumstances where you have multiple sites in multiple counties, and so very complex interrelated issues. And it does appear to us to be appropriate for a state agency to deal with that, given the complexity. And some experience on the state level, mostly with the PCA, for dealing with multi-site, multiple county EISs. There's a finding having to do with the 32 mentions the Hancock Pro Pork Feedlot Project in Stephen and Pope counties, and so that was a case where the state did handle multi-site, multi-agency. In terms of the EQB's expertise, and that's the recommendation of the staff that the EQB is the RGU. The rationale really has to do with the multi-agency nature of this of the impacts of this project and the expertise not just lying with one agency but with multiple agencies, mostly the PCA, the DNR, and the Department of Transportation. But there are other areas of expertise as well. Deed in terms of economic impact, for example. And the EQB, by its own statute, and this is in finding 36, has that broad responsibility to examine issues spanning several state agencies. The other part of that, and this is covered in 37, is that its membership, including the other agencies, the EQB is able to draw on the expertise of the multiple agencies. And so finally, the last finding, 38, concludes that the EQB has greater expertise in analyzing the potential impacts of multiple phased action and cross-county projects than Fillmore, Houston, or Winona counties. And I don't know if you wish me to read through the conclusions of law.
I think that would be good, and then okay. We'll take some public comment, Bob.
Okay. So based on the findings of fact, the Minnesota Environmental Quality Board makes the following conclusions of law. One, any of the foregoing findings of fact more appropriately designated as conclusions of law are hereby adopted as such. Two, the Environmental Quality Board has jurisdiction over the subject matter of this proceeding pursuant to Minnesota Statutes Chapter 116D and Minnesota Rules 4410-500 Subpart 6. Three, the request for EQB to decide the question whether to designate a different RGU for the proposed projects were properly brought to the EQB board. Number four, and that should have been requests. Number four, the EQB concludes that the EQB has greater expertise in analyzing the potential impacts of the proposed project than Fillmore, Houston, or Winona counties. Based on the findings of fact, conclusions, and order, the entire record of this proceeding, the Minnesota Environmental Quality Board hereby makes the following order. The EQB hereby reassigns the status and responsibilities of the responsible governmental unit for silica sand mines proposed by Minnesota Sands, LLC, in Fillmore, Houston, and Winona counties from Houston, Fillmore, Houston, or Winona County to the Environmental Quality Board. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Bob. At this time, I think we will take a comment from the public. And David Williams, good to see you again.
Mr. Chair, EQB board members, Executive Director Patton. My name is David Williams. I live and work in Fillmore County. I occasionally assist our Fillmore County commissioners with regard to some projects, and one of those projects has been trying to resolve issues with regard to silica sand mining. Commissioners Bakke and Kasi from Fillmore County are here and are certainly available to answer questions from you. I support the request of the Fillmore County Board of Commissioners and other county staffers to redesignate a state agency to act as RGU of a possible EIS on the clustered mining sites in Fillmore, Winona, and Houston counties. Fillmore County's request is also supported, as you know, by the boards of commissioners of Houston and Winona counties. I also support the proposed order of the EQB staff for the EQB to be redesignated by this board as the RGU of the proposed environmental review. Under Minnesota Rule 4410.0500, subpart 6, which has been recited to you numerous times, you're aware that you can override the designation of local government as the RGU if you determine that the designee has greater expertise in analyzing the potential impacts of the project. Certainly, you have the right to allow these county governments to continue as RGU. However, I think this would be a great burden on these counties to study the potential impacts of these clustered mines on the various cross-county jurisdictions. In the Fillmore County letter to you that you have in your board packet, Fillmore County gave some of the reasons for requesting your action. One reason is that it is not practical or legal for Winona County to conduct an EIS on property outside of its jurisdiction. Another reason is that the state would serve as the better arbiter of a scoping request. A third reason is that the state's environmental experts would be less likely to be challenged regarding the scope and completeness of the final EIS document. And then finally, one RGU, preferably the state, handling an EIS would create less confusion, maintain consistent information, and provide a better study of the silica sand mining phenomenon. Equally important, the real issues to be studied during such an environmental review are state agency issues: air emissions, excessive water appropriation, water degradation, state highway repair and deterioration, public health and safety, environmental damage. The EQB is the best RGU to oversee the participation of the DNR, the PCA, the Department of Health, Department of Transportation in this environmental review effort, not local county governments. I would also point out that this is consistent with the recommendations of this EQB board in its November 2012 recommendations, which were implementing the governor's executive order, which established as a first priority to strengthen the capacity of the EQB for oversight and assistance in implementing environmental review. And so this redesignation could certainly support your own conclusions about how to enhance EQB's role and certainly fulfill that first priority that you yourself as an agency concluded back in November. In conclusion, I urge you to approve the proposed order redesignating the EQB as the RGU of this effort. And I would ask that if you have any questions, perhaps you might ask Commissioners Bakke or Kasi.
Are there any questions for Mr. Williams or Commissioner Scassi or Commissioner Bakke?
Mr. Chair, just...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Kate. I'm curious about... Sorry. Thank you.
That's once, right?
I owe you, Kate. Sorry.
Get out of jail free card for you.
The scope, do you have any opinion? And Mr. Williams, thank you for all your work on these issues. I appreciate all the time you've spent here in St. Paul providing testimony. Curious about other projects not under the ownership of Minnesota Sands in Fillmore County. Are there other projects that are currently proposed in Fillmore County that are not under the ownership of Minnesota Sands?
Commissioner Stein, yes, there certainly is at least one other pending project that is not under the current ownership of Minnesota Sands LLC. It's located somewhat near the proposed clustered mines, but it's not exactly in the immediate area. And I think each of the other counties has similar kinds of projects. There are other proposed mines in Houston and Winona counties that are not necessarily right in the same cluster of the projects that are identified in your briefing memo.
Thank you.
Kate?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Williams, Fillmore County is close to my heart. I have three generations of family buried in Newburgh in the Methodist Church there. So it's a part of the state I know fairly well. And I'm just curious, I don't know county government as well, and I'm curious about the capacity, if you could help us understand a little bit more what kind of staff capacity the county has, numbers, you know, professional expertise to kind of take on the challenge of this, you know. If one of the counties were to go and do the whole thing, forgetting about the jurisdictional issues, which I think you raised articulately, what kind of capacity and expertise does the county have in this area?
Mr. Williams?
I mean, perhaps I should defer to Commissioner Bakke on that question.
Commissioner Bakke, welcome. You thought you were going to duck, right, today? Welcome.
Thank you.
Could you identify yourself for the record,
please? Dwayne Bakke, Fillmore County Commissioner. And I think the last time I was before this board, we didn't have laptop computers yet. And I've worked with pretty much all of you, I guess, in some capacity or another somewhere else. So anyway, maybe I'll say a little background first. When I was, you know, we've been getting the notifications of the EAW as it was going through the process in Winona County. And all the state agencies that made a comment all requested that Winona County do an EIS and that they include the sites in Fillmore County with that. And that's when I come up with the idea that maybe it would be best if a state agency were to do that, and I was actually hoping that it would end up being the EQB with a combination of everybody. And we would get a study on everything from the health effects to the transportation effects to the environmental effects and the deed effects, you know, the economic side of it. So, and that's how it started, I guess. And then, you know, I got the other two counties involved and told them I thought the same thing, they should also support that. It was hard for me to understand how they were going to be able to do an EIS for sites in Fillmore County that hadn't even gone through the AEW process yet. So it's kind of interesting. But anyway, getting to the question you had about staff, we've got in our zoning department, we've got an administrator and an assistant. We've got, you obviously got a Department of Public Health. You've got, you got attorneys, a couple people, a couple assistant attorneys. Not a large staff in a county our size. Houston County would probably be about the same. Winona maybe have a little bit larger environmental side of their county probably has more staff members. We also rely on SWCD for a lot of our environmental side of things. So whenever we have a committee, we put something together, we've always got the head of the SWCD there as part of our expertise also.
Further questions? Brian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Mr. Williams, Mr. Bakke, for being here to answer questions. The question I have is could probably be answered differently by different people, and I think staff may have an answer for it, and Mr. Bakke may have a different answer. But my question relates to the fact that you're using language in your findings of fact, Bob, that refer to geographic area. You said phased actions can be considered phased actions if they're in the same geographic area. And then you also, in one of the findings, indicated that you can view the same geographic area in terms of exceeding thresholds, acreage thresholds in the statute. My question is, how are we defining the geographic area? And my concern would be, I mean, I can look at a map and say, well, this is southeast Minnesota. That's a geography. Well, okay, well, where does that start and where does it stop? And I'm looking at this because let's just say, for example, at some point in time, a feedlot is proposed in Houston County and one in Fillmore County. At that point in time, are we now in the same geography? And because those two feedlots could be considered in the same geographic area, are they now subject to an EIS? So I think the basis of my question really is, how are we defining this to be the same geographic area? Where does it stop? Where does it start?
Bob?
Thank you. Thank you for your question, Commissioner Knapstad. You are, I think, identifying one perfectly reasonable question to explore. The I was trying to flip to the phased action rule, but the I didn't bring my rule book down up here with me, but it's in the findings. The phased action does refer to same geographic area, and it is not defined. There is a little bit of crossover with some of the language that is in the cumulative effects language, which talks about environmental effects on the same environmental resources. And those are not identical, but they're very similar concepts in that I think the way we look at it is that if they're close enough if they're in a similar enough geographic area to have environmental effects on the same environmental resources, then we would consider them in the same geographic area. And if you look at the map here, one of the things that you know they are kind of in two clusters. There's a cluster toward on the west side and a cluster on the east side. And so, you know, if you did split them up, that's probably how they would split. Though they're certainly clusters, but they all drain to the Root River, and so that's one shared resource. Also, if you examine the transportation routes, there would be some shared environmental effect having to do with truck hauling. So there, you know, it's something that we haven't examined in a whole lot of detail, but it does seem that they are in the same geographic area as meant by the spirit of the language.
Follow?
I think the
Mr. Williams has a comment.
Mr. Williams?
Just responding to your question again, Commissioner Stein asked me if there were any mines within Fillmore County that did not come within that cluster, and that's why I responded by indicating that there is a proposed mine, actually an existing mine that it proposes to expand, that was not included within the Fillmore County request because Fillmore County did not necessarily include it in its mind as being a part of the cluster. It's probably about 25 miles away from the clustered mine sites and was not being operated by the same mining operator, and therefore it was the conclusion of Fillmore County to not include that within its request for redesignation.
Thank you. Commissioner Stein.
Yeah, just was going to ask my fellow board member, Mr. Navstead, if he would it be in your interest in the future to have a discussion of what getting a finding related to the same geographic area? I mean, is that something you were kind of looking for? Is, like, how do we know that we're in the same, you know, there's not a finding in the proposed findings, the fact that, for example, it's within the same watershed, that it's the proximity in terms of distance from each other, things like that. Is that what you were, I'm wondering if that would be an area you'd like to explore for future findings.
Commissioner Nepstead.
Well, I think Mr. Patton came close to answering it. You had indicated that the statute refers to the same natural resource could be utilized as reference to the same geographic area, if I heard that correctly. My interest here, of course, is, you know, this action, they look to be in the same geographic area, but I would like that defined because, as Commissioner Bakke knows well, if you're doing an EAW on a feedlot and somebody finds out there's a feedlot going in Houston County and they're in the same geographic area, that could rise to an EIS where that may not have been the intent. So I just want to know how we're doing this.
Commissioner Bakke?
Yeah, I'd like to try to answer that. It has to do with ownership, and it has to do with phased action and connected to. Therefore, Minnesota Sands is the proposer of several sites. If you had a feedlot proposal that was the same situation, that may drive that into an EAW category or certainly into an NPDS category and possibly into an EIS on a discretionary ask because of the size and again, getting back to all the different, as long as the ownership is connected. And, you know, the Minnesota Sands, all the ones, the other thing that they were all looking at that time, and they probably still are, just it's going to be a different place, they were looking at processing in one site. So all these Minnesota Sands projects were all going to probably go to the same site for processing, again, driving it into that, you know, EIS category and into the connected and everything, versus the other pit that's existing in Fillmore County that is a, you know, single owner, single site, 50-acre maximum size will be. It's an independent. It's a different. It's a different situation. Not connected to them at all. Different haul routes. Different process. Actually, without going too far into it, our ordinance we talk about. We've actually got no processing on site. No flocculant use. No water. No washing of sand outside of dust control. So we've got some. We had a moratorium on, same as the rest of the counties in the area, and we've taken ours off by changing the rules quite a bit and put in some pretty strong restrictions, even to the point of your four sites that you talk about in Fillmore County. We've got a limit of five in the total county. So all five sites have now been applied for, and that'll be it unless we get challenged on it. That's as big as the sand industry is going to get for the silica mining in our county. We've already got 26 sand pits in our county right now. It's nothing new to have sand hauled in several truckloads in a day for certain projects, for highways and things. So that part of it's nothing new, but this day after day, same location, same haul route is something that's new. So some more information for you there, I guess, if you want some background.
Mm-hmm. Other comments or questions? Thank you. Mr. Williams and Commissioner Bakke. Amanda Griggs, representing Houston County Protectors. Amanda, welcome to the board. For those of you that don't know, that is a laptop bringing to the desk.
I'm trying to save paper.
Yeah, good for you. Welcome, and please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, Executive Director Patton, and members of the board. My name is Amanda Griggs, and I'm with the Houston County Protectors. I'm a resident of the most diverse ecosystem in the state, Houston County, of the Driftless area. I've come before you today to express citizens' concerns relating to the industrial silica sand industry's adverse effects on the environment. Within a sensitive system such as the, what I would consider a geographic area of southeast Minnesota's driftless region, the impacts of this industry could be devastating. And I thank you, Mr. Patton, for recognizing this and all the work on this emerging threat. It seems clear that the EQB being the RGU fits well with its defined purpose set in 1973. Our local governments would be better served under the related actions EIS. Better yet, I would hope that there could be a GEIS to even better serve the area. Though this overarching approach is important, there is concern in lumping the scope of each individual proposed mining site under one roof. In particular, the impact differences of removing sand from the Jordan layer versus the St. Peter, the ecological sensitivity comparison of the bluff land versus the Rochester Plateau of the ECS provinces, and can we trust the mining companies or landowners to do an effective report of possible listed or threatened species? I'm a native seed and plant specialist, and I even have a hard time identifying species depending on the time of year. For example, a large patch of American ginseng, golden seal, Western prairie fringe orchid. DNR's Ann Pierce reported at one time, this ecoregion comprises 3% of Minnesota's land area, but provides habitat for 43% of the state's plant and animal species listed as endangered, threatened, or of special concern. Another point I'd like to make is the hydrology. The mapping of the Houston County hydrology is not completed yet. The aggregate mapping program is complete, but the hydrology is not done in Houston County, so I'm concerned that there's permitting in our county when we don't even understand the hydrology of the area. The timing and the rush of the mining in the area is very concerning, and we would hope that the state would take time to review this. I've been making trips to the Capitol for the past 4 weeks in support of Senator Schmidt's Senate File 786. It includes a moratorium and a GEIS, and the citizens of the Houston County Protectors and many people in the area think that is a very important piece to doing this right. And I'll conclude that our beautiful state was named using a Dakota word meaning sky-tinted water. The landscape's beauty is reflected in this water as a sign of health. I look forward to being proud to have state agencies that protect the special ecosystems of this driftless region. I thank you for this opportunity to speak today on behalf of the concerned citizens of the Houston County Protectors.
Thank you very much, Ms. Griggs. Questions? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Joanna Ruprecht from the Land Stewardship Project. Welcome to the board, Joanna. How are you today?
Good.
Well, still kicking. Welcome. Can you identify yourself for the record, please?
Yes. Good afternoon. I'm Joanna Ruprecht. I live in Lewiston, Minnesota, in Winona County, and I work for the Land Stewardship Project. We're a nonprofit Minnesota-based membership organization. We have 3,100 member households, primarily farm and rural people. We were founded in 1982, and our mission is to foster an ethic of stewardship for the land. I'd like to ask you to honor the requests of Winona, Fillmore, and Houston counties and redesignate the RGU for this EIS. The scale and the multi-jurisdictional nature of this project mean it would not be appropriate for any one county to be responsible for this EIS. And I support your staff's recommendation that the EQB itself should be designated as the RGU. The potential environmental impacts from this project, as well as the other impacts that also must be considered in an EIS, are extremely wide-ranging. Impacts on air quality, water quantity, impacts on farmland and on wildlife habitat, transportation impacts, public health and safety impacts, sociological and economic impacts, and much more. So as your staff recommendation indicates, it's very appropriate for the EQB, because of its multi-agency nature, to be the RGU rather than any other single agency. So I ask you as the board to follow that recommendation. And I'd also like to reinforce another point that was mentioned in the staff memo and by Mr. Patton and his comments. Although this EIS has been reported in the media as being voluntary, that's really not the case. It includes 11 proposed mines. They're all related to each other as phased actions. They total over 615 acres, as indicated in your staff memo. And so the total acreage of phased actions must be considered when applying mandatory EIS thresholds. The acreage in this case is almost four times the mandatory EIS threshold of 160 acres for non-metallic mining. So this EIS is clearly mandatory and not voluntary. Also, the findings prepared for today don't take into account everything that needs to be included in this EIS. And Commissioner Bakke mentioned this also. I do want to make sure you're all aware that Minnesota Sands LLC and Minnesota Proppant LLC have the same ownership. And any frac sand processing and shipping proposed by these same owners is certainly a phased action with these mines. It may well also be a connected action. Therefore, it also needs to be included in this EIS. So Minnesota Proppant LLC is proposing a frac sand processing and shipping facility. If there's not enough detail on that proposal available at this time for it to be included in the EIS, then a supplemental EIS would be appropriate to be prepared later, as the environmental review rules require. Rule 4410.2000, projects requiring an EIS, subpart 4, and connected actions and phased actions, reads, multiple projects and multiple stages of a single project that are connected actions or phased actions must be considered in total when determining the need for an EIS and in preparing the EIS. In connected actions and phased actions, where it is not possible to adequately address all the project components or stages at the time of the initial EIS, a supplemental EIS must be completed before approval and construction of each subsequent project component or stage. The supplemental EIS must address the impacts associated with the particular project component or stage that were not addressed in the initial EIS. And also, Mr. Patton has mentioned that it's appropriate for the RGU to consider what other independent projects might need to be included under the related actions EIS rule. And Commissioner Stein also asked a question about this, about other projects not proposed by Minnesota Sands, but in the immediate area. And I want to make sure you're all aware that there is another proposed mine, the Nisbet mine, which is within that same cluster in Saratoga Township. It's directly north of the Fillmore and Winona County line. It is in Winona County, directly north of the Kessler, Boyum, Wadowitz, and Dobbelstein sites there. So that mine is proposed by a different ownership from Minnesota Sands, but it is, again, immediately in that cluster, clearly in the same geographic, environmentally relevant area. And that mine has completed an EAW. The EIS decision has not yet been made on it, however, so I want to make sure you're all aware of that. And finally, as I mentioned, the potential impacts to be considered in this EIS are wide-ranging. There needs to be an extremely thorough scoping process with substantial public input. I would encourage that public scoping meetings be held in Winona, Houston, or Fillmore County, perhaps one in each, so that they're easily accessible to the people who would be most directly impacted by this proposed project. The Land Stewardship Project's members and our board believe the potential impacts of industrial-scale frac sand mining projects like this one are incompatible with our mission of stewardship of the land. And this EIS must be a comprehensive, thorough, independent examination of those impacts. That's what the people of Southeast Minnesota, Winona, Fillmore, and Houston counties deserve. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Ruprecht. Questions? Comments? If not, thank you very much. Eric Bryan. Eric Bryan is here representing Bryant Rock Products.
Can we talk about the one right after?
Pardon me?
Isn't there the silica sand report?
Oh.
We're going to talk about after.
He's not here for this, yeah. For this decision.
I'm going to talk about the three
counties. Okay. You're going to talk about the report. All right. I'm sorry. Oh, yeah. Right there. It says silica sand report. Sure. and Scott, are you here to testify also for the, yeah, all right. Okay, that at this point in time concludes those that are registered to make public comment. Is there anyone else that would like to make comment before we move forward? If not, seeing none, members of the board, any? I think what I'd like to do now is move forward with a motion and a second, and then we can have some discussion following the motion.
Mr. Chair?
Motion's in order. Commissioner Stein?
I'll move the adoption of the staff resolution, just looking for it in my packet here. It's found on after page 8 of the findings of fact, conclusions in order. So there's the resolution for the Minnesota Environmental Quality Board designation of a different responsible governmental unit, RGU, for environmental review of multiple silica sand projects proposed by Minnesota Sands LLC in Fillmore, Houston, Winona counties. Be it resolved that the Minnesota Environmental Quality Board approves and adopts the findings of fact, conclusions, and order designating the Environmental Quality Board as the responsible governmental unit, RGU, for the environmental review of the proposed silica sand projects in Fillmore, Houston, and Winona counties, and be it further resolved that David J. Fredrickson, chair of the board, is authorized to sign the adopted findings of fact, conclusions, and order.
Is there a second?
Second.
There is a second. Now, further discussion. Welcome, Commissioner Clark Sieben and Commissioner Kronk. We have moved along in a process. I think you're generally up to speed. You have seen the packet, and we're moving along in a process now in which we will. You heard the resolution. Further discussion on the motion,
Mr. Chair. Just
Commissioner Stein,
regarding the question I had earlier about sites that may be in the same geographic area that are not under the ownership of Minnesota Sands. It's my understanding, and perhaps Mr. Patton or Ms. Hedman can respond, if the board comes to a conclusion or has evidence that would suggest that another site, another project, is in the same geographic area, and can be considered a connected action because of impacts to natural resources, transportation systems, or related activities of the mining operations, the processing operations, et cetera, so that we might be led in the future to determine that they're connected. What would the process be for the board to consider that under the scope discussion of an EIS that I've just proposed it by resolution that we undertake?
Mr. Patton.
Thank you. I'll take, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Stein, board members, I'll take first crack at that, I guess, and Ms. Hedman can clean up after me. We've discussed this as well. The matter before you, the matter that was brought before you, was consideration of these particular mines owned by Minnesota Sands in these several counties and designation of RGU, and that's the action we're taking in this resolution going forward. And I alluded to this a little bit further, but I was talking about it in terms of the related actions EIS. It applies as well to any other projects that could be phased or connected, whoever is the RGU, whether it's the state or whether it's the counties, one of the things that needs to be done in the first thing that needs to be done in the EIS process is a scoping process. And part of that will be defining the projects that are contained within the scope of the EIS. And if evidence suggests that there are other projects that are, for example, connected, which means that they're essentially interdependent projects. They're projects that can't live without each other, that those are required to also be included within the EIS. And I don't believe the action today precludes
further consideration and further inclusion of those projects in the scope of the EIS.
Thank you.
Ms. Hedman, are you going to clean up?
Not much to clean up.
It's on.
Except again, turn up. Mm-hmm. Not much to clean up. Bob, you did a nice job.
Thank you.
One quick thing, though, just so we're very clear on the language, because the rule talks about connected actions and phased action. That refers to them in one thing as though they're the same, and they're a little distinct. So I'm just going to read the rule language so the board and the record and the audience listening understand sort of the nuances between the three. So starting out first with connected actions, it's found at Minnesota Rule 4410.0200, subpart 9C, connected actions. Two projects are connected actions, although I think it begs the question, it could be more than two projects, potentially, if a responsible governmental unit determines that they are related in any of the following ways. A, one project would directly induce the other. B, one project is a prerequisite for the other, and the prerequisite project is not justified by itself. Or C, neither project is justified by itself. So that's the definition for connected actions. Turning now, again, still in 4410.0200, the definition section, to subpart 60, phased action means two or more projects to be undertaken by the same proposer that an RGU determines, A, will have environmental effects on the same geographic area, and B, are substantially certain to be undertaken sequentially over a limited period of time. In addition, you've heard the term related action. And so there are three distinct things, just for the clarification of the record and the board prior to its vote, that there are three distinct things. I think Mr. Patton is correct in saying the matter before you today is simply the request by the three counties, Fillmore, Houston, and Winona, to redesignate for the specific Minnesota Sands projects. However, the next step, should a redesignation of the RGU occur, then the next step would be deciding the scope. And therefore, then these sort of issues of connected, phased, and related actions could be undertaken at that step.
Thank you.
Brian?
Mr. Chair, I'm cognizant of the current staffing levels we have at the EQB, and I'm confident that legislation will increase our staff size, but we don't know that for sure. My understanding is that the project proposer bears the cost of an EQB. Is that correct?
Mr. Patton?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Knapstead, yes, that is correct. Project-specific EISs, the costs are borne by the project proposer. So there is a cost assessment. There's a cost agreement that's arrived at between the RGU and the project proposer before work starts. And so that would allow the EQB, if the EQB should be the RGU, to be able to hire project manager or consultants or both to be able to complete the work.
Okay, so
I will also emphasize that the other part of this is that again, we are, as by virtue of being the EQB, we have the member agencies at the table and are able to draw on resources, and also those member agencies that are contributing resources also have the ability to be reimbursed for costs through the project. So we're going to be relying on expertise from multiple agencies in this regard, and there is an ability to recoup costs through the cost agreement. I guess the final point I'd say is that we are EQB's PCA is our host, and that gives us a lot of ability and experience in preparing EISs collectively with EQB staff and PCA staff that are right around the corner. That helps us be able to manage, confident that we can approach the EIS and do it well.
Just following, Mr. Chair, the question kind of popped in my mind a moment ago with legal reading, and that is that I'm confident that the agencies have the staff, and I'm confident that that's going to be augmented. But worst case scenario, we can hire consultants, and there's a proposer there that brings financial resources with them. If through the scoping process, it's determined that another mine or two, proposed mine or two, fall within this category of the EIS, do we then have the ability to apportion some of those costs to somebody outside of the single project proposer under consideration now?
Mr. Patton?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Knapstead, yes, we do.
And could we get a videographer from them? Always trying to work it, you know.
No. Editor.
Mr. Chair, no.
The answer is yes. Is that correct, Bob?
Yes.
All right. David?
On a related point, I understand that the agencies can get their costs reimbursed here, but that doesn't address the workload issues and the capacity issues that we've got, and so we can pay for that expertise, but we've got limited staff out there that have knowledge of these issues, and they're very busy already, full plates, and so there are some capacity issues, and I think it goes to some of the legislation and the governor's supplemental budget, where we really need, with or without this EIS, need some additional capacity in our state agencies, just as the counties do, to deal with this emerging issue.
Thank you. Other comments or questions? Bob?
Mr. Chair, if we're finished with that line of question, there's one thing I neglected to cover, which is simply that we received a number of letters, about 20 different letters from citizens in the forms of email or hard copy letters. All of those were in support of the state taking over RGU status. A number, and there were five phone calls I've received as well. There were references in some of the messages to supporting the PCA as the RGU, but that was as an alternative to the DNR. And I believe in the news it was reported that the DNR was going to be the RGU, or was desired by the project proposer to be the RGU. And so I think the comments were in regard to reaction to that.
Okay. Very good. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
That. I think at this point in time, seeing no other hands raised, I think we're probably ready to vote. Do you have the roll call list in front of you? All right, Bob, if you want to call the roll.
I will. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Sieben. Clark Sieben.
Aye.
Commissioner Cronk.
Aye.
Ms. Duncanson.
Aye.
Commissioner Ellinger.
Aye.
Commissioner Fredrickson.
Aye.
Ms. Knuth.
Aye.
Commissioner Knapstad.
Aye.
Commissioner Rothman.
Aye.
Mr. Saxog.
Aye.
Commissioner Stein.
Aye.
Mr. Tomlinson.
Aye.
Commissioner Zelli.
Aye.
I believe that is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There are 12 ayes.
The motion passes on a unanimous vote. Thank you. Let's go then to the last item on the agenda. And we could take a break if you'd like.
Yes.
All right. Why don't we take a 10-minute break, and then we'll come back at 3 o'clock and reconvene.
I'm fully supportive.
You didn't know that was my attempt at rapping. And so I should not give up my day job, right? All right. We're at the last item on the agenda, the Silica Sand report, and it certainly is a discussion item. I'd like to ask Jeff to walk us through with a summary, and then I'd be pleased to receive your comments at this time after Jeff walks us through.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. You might recall that back last year, the Environmental Quality Board did receive a petition supporting the preparation of a generic environmental impact statement for silica sand to analyze potential environmental effects of the silica sand industry. In the October meeting, the board instructed staff to prepare a report asking, what do we know, what don't we know? We provided a preliminary draft, I think it was in January, where we talked about it, got some direction, and the staff, meaning EQB staff, as well as invaluable help from lots of people from different member agencies, have finished that report, and we are presenting it to you today. At long last, we have a finished report. What I'd like to do is just sort of go through it briefly, just sort of summarize. Not everybody is aware of what's been going on with this. Certainly can comment on things. We are not asking for any sort of approval or, acceptance or anything like that. Basically, the board asked its staff for information. Here's the information. That's it. It's not like, an action that is an EIS redesignation for the IG or anything like that. So that's what I'd like to do. I'll try to get through this fairly rapidly. And I'm just going through the actual document itself, so if the board has any questions, we can actually go to a page. It starts out, I would like to start out with the introduction. And one of the things that I think is really important, and pardon the potential vertiginous effect here, but there are some things that I would like to point out in the text. And really important is that, we're going to shrink this a little more. This last paragraph, support provides a summary of information relevant to the questions at hand. It does not pretend to be encyclopedic, nor does this report advocate a particular perspective. It's not pro-sand. It's not anti-sand mining. The intent is to provide a basis for further research. In other words, what don't we know that we could look into further? That might occur through a GEIS. It might occur through other means. This report is not attempting to decide how that should be followed up on. In the last sentence, it is recognized that the information presented here can and should be augmented as more is learned. I think I said this before back in January. No matter what goes into this report, somebody's going to wish there was more information on what they thought was important. And there are other people who are going to think that's not important. Why is that even in there? It's the nature of the beast, I guess. And my apologies to anybody who is displeased, but we were trying to be objective, not promoting, not opposing, and not pretending that this report is everything there is to know in the world, okay? That's a bit of an apologia, but at the same point, at the same time, I think it's really important that nobody thinks that we're trying to be more than we are. And this report is not trying to be more than it is. So moving on from that, the background chapter, it really is just that. It's sort of a primer on the whole issue. Remember that we did say that even though the EQB board asked us for this report, there's a larger audience. And part of that audience is the general public. Part of that audience is the legislature. Part is the governor and his staff. Part is the other agencies. It's really everybody. So we wanted to give sort of a primer on, okay, what is silica sand? Starts out with that. What is fracking? What is this all about? We did hear about somebody who was driving through Wisconsin and said, oh, I saw all that fracking going on. It's like, time out. They're not fracking in Wisconsin. They're mining sand. So there's a lot of confusion about that still. So we wanted to just point that out. Locations of here are just, where the shale plays are. Location of how much sand, silica sand is being mined at different parts of the country. Location in the upper Midwest, this is a really important piece showing that in this red and pink area is where in Minnesota and Wisconsin the silica sand is available, mineable, and this is really the area that's, you know, the topic of discussion here. The quartz-rich sandstone area within 50 feet of the surface. I'm going to blow this up just a little bit because I think it's an important map, and it relates to geographic area, okay, that came up as part of the EIS designation. You know, this is the geographic area here that is being talked about for this EIS. Okay, and where is that going to lead us? Just remember, that's these yellowed areas are where the sand is, like within 50 feet of the surface. It's a summary of what the map is saying, but I wanted to point that out because we'll come back to that later in the document here. Showing the geology, the formations, things like that. Again, what kind of sandstone, different elevation, different depths underground where you can typically find these things. So that's really what we're trying to do. The difference between construction sand and gravel, silica sand, you can see in this really great graphic, the roundness of the silica sand and why that's important. It's explained as a proppant in the fracking process. Talking about processing sand. This is something, again, I'd like to blow up a little bit. It's very simple diagram, just trying to make a point. The point being that what we can't, for those who can't really read it, here's this is just showing there's a sand mine here, then it's got to get trucked to a processing facility, then it goes on a truck where it gets loaded on a railroad or maybe even a barge, and then it gets taken to the oil and gas field. Or maybe the processing facility is attached to the sand mine in the same location, where it would then be trucked to a rail location and so on and so forth. Or they all might be in the same place. Or there might be a rail facility next to the mine where it's taken somewhere else. There's all these different potential combinations. The point being that this fragmented or multidimensional or multi-element nature of the industry makes it complex to deal with. It's not just a mine. It's not just an industrial processing facility. It's not just a transportation facility. It's all of the above, or it's one of these that are connected with each other. So it's really more complex than just the type of things that we're normally trying to think of. And that's also why it's complex when asking questions about, okay, what does the what do the environmental review rules say should happen here? What is the geographic area that's involved? You know, what are connected actions? What are phased actions? All those sort of things. When you have all these different types of activities as part of the industry, it just makes it a little trickier to deal with. And we're learning, and it's possible that the environmental review rules, Minnesota Rules 4410, need to be amended in the foreseeable future to address some of these things. I mean, we're finding gray areas, things that are falling between the lines, things that are, if you will, coloring outside of the lines. And how do you deal with that? You know, nothing's perfect. We're learning. So that's sort of the background about it, the sort of market summary, socioeconomics. We had a real difficult time finding data specific to sand. It's a fairly recent phenomenon. Data, for example, the employment data that's shown in these charts from Deed, it doesn't separate out sand mining and quarrying from any types of mining and quarrying. It maybe I can try to blow this up, make it a little easier to see. The category right here is mining and quarrying, and that's all we have. We don't have anything that breaks out sand mining or sand and gravel mining, things like that. So it makes it difficult to quantify exactly what are the effects, pluses and minuses, of this industry. And that leads me to what is at the end of all the chapters from here on in, these potential research topics. These are the what we don't know questions. And you'll see on this one, potential effects on tourism, tax revenues available, employment, all these things, they're not really documented well yet on the larger scale. And so these are things that I would like to see looked into. Certainly we're going to have a company that knows how many people they hired or how much taxes they paid. We're going to have a mine that's going to say, we hired this many people. But overall for the industry, there really isn't data to do that. And I think that's something that would really be useful as part of further study. Air quality. It talks about a number of things in the air quality chapter. This is a nice little graphic that shows us really the complexity of the size of particle issues. This is supposed to be a human hair. This is supposed to be all in scale. And the 2.5 particle size, PM 2.5, is really small. You know, it's much smaller than even the width of a human hair. Those are the particles that are really dangerous. PM4, the ones that are worried about getting deeper into the lungs. And that's as far as I'm going to go because it's going to get way out of my depth on the whole health issue. But this is why it's difficult. And the point is we really don't know. We don't have the data on how silica mining, silica processing facilities is actually affecting things. We know what potential disease risks are. And that's discussed in this chapter, but we don't have the data to be able to say what's the effect of the mines. And so at the end of this, there are research topics, the concentration of silica sand associated with silica sand mining. Basically, we need to monitor some mines and find out if the ambient air is actually dangerous or not. We don't know. That's a research topic that needs to be looked into. The health impact assessment is the larger analysis of health impacts, including air, could be the water quality, a lot of different things. So these are research topics. These are what we don't know topics. And each one of the chapters goes through that water quality. We had some really great additions in the last round on water quality and other natural resources from our DNR and PCA people. This is talking about the karst geology and what happens with that. By the way, that's another issue on geographic area for an environmental impact statement. This karst formations in that part of the state really cover a large part of that area, and we'll show in a figure later on that the sand locations are overlaying these karst formations. And that's one of the reasons why this is all in a same geographic area for purposes of phased actions as well. So it's not only the watershed, but there are other environmental natural resource issues that need to be addressed. So we've got the karst issues, surface water, talks about some of them. Ah, here we go. All right, so the karst, the active karst in this data is the red. And geez, where are our silica sand resources in the state? A lot of them are down there. So these things are really located in the same locations, and that's why more research on that topic should be conducted. Potential resource topics, cumulative impacts, guidance for drinking water, testing methods for drinking water, long-term effects in the karst regions. These are what we don't know, and these are things that bear further attention, merit further attention in the way of research. All right, so that was water quality. We have water quantity, somewhat similar, but this is talking about drawing water used in the mining, the different stages of the silica sand industry. There's a nice little graphic that's showing about potential effects on groundwater, but I like the one. This one right here is really instructive, I thought, where it's saying, okay, this is very simple, but if you're going to be drawing water from a source that could potentially draw down the water level, could potentially affect other wells in the area, does that happen with the sand mines? We don't know. And that's the point. More research is necessary on this. So we go through a lot of different issues on there, looking at the what's needed. Transportation, we talk about issues on trucking and the road systems, the rail systems here, and a little bit about the barges. This is a nice graphic just to show, okay, the red is where the sand is, the sandstone near 50 feet or less of the surface, and where are the rail lines. One of the articles that we were that we looked at talked about how in Wisconsin the rail service in the sand mining area is better than in Minnesota, and that might be a constraint for sand mining in Minnesota. It was a question. It was an unknown, but it was a question. I think this graphic is really interesting. I mean, is there adequate rail service in the area? And if not, then, of course, it would have to be trucked. That gets into potential issues with roads and trucking, and so all those sort of things. So, again, it's everything sort of tied together. It's hard to pull the strands apart on different permitting issues and regulatory issues and things like that. So potential research topics, you know, air quality issues of transportation facilities, you know, loading the sand into the different trucks, barges, rail cars, things like that. Big question about, geez, if these train cars are driving by the back of my house, are they blowing out enough sand that's going to affect me? Is it even an issue? Nobody knows. We don't have the research to definitively say that, so that's a good research topic. Traffic projections on the larger scale. We talked about that with the same geographic area of an EIS, you know, transportation issues. So this is what this report is supposed to be doing, is trying to do, just lay out these are the issues that, you know, bear further investigation. This governance document is trying to lay out, okay, local government planning can address some of these things. Unfortunately, there are quite a number of local governments that don't do planning. They just react to things, and when something comes up, they're kind of stuck because they haven't really looked into the future. Not that that necessarily would have solved the problem for the sand industry, because there are some new things. But at the same time, you know, overall, if you've done no land use planning at all in your community, you're even more stuck. Even the communities that have experience with sand and gravel mining over the time, they're confronted with some new things with just the silica sand mining. You know, so is the whole question of air quality, is it a threat? Is there a silicosis threat near mines? Things like that. That was not really an issue before. So these things, you know, they're different. And plus the great volume and the big boom in the silica sand mining industry that they didn't really deal with before. A little bit of discussion about state agency rules. The point on this is that there needs to be more talking between local governments and state governments on who's doing what, who knows what, how can we share information, things like that. A little review of the environmental review categories, the Minnesota Rules 4410. A little bit on noise. There has been some question about noise. The noise rules in state statute are pretty thin, and they're very difficult oftentimes to enforce. So that's an issue potentially. So I think that, you know, there's a lot of coordination that could be looked into. What are the best ways to do that? Maybe the state level government is a good way to pull together some guidance, best management practices, or BMPs that would help local governments. Also talking about additional review to get a little more guidance on phased actions. What's the same geographic area for a phased action? You know, there's a lot of, we've been receiving a lot of phone calls about those types of questions. Maybe the environmental review rules could bear a little update on that sort of thing. So now this is a chapter that was added since you saw the draft, and I'm so glad we got this from the DNR people. This is really, really useful. I'm just going to go through some of the maps. These are ecological subsections and basically deciduous forest, oak savanna, prairie, things like that. There are categories of ecological areas, and you can see that the sand area affects a number of them, and there are a number of species of concern, species of greatest conservation need and concern in these different subsections. And there's just numbers of things that have been documented that's out there that are sensitive. And in the areas where the sand is located, is that a threat to them? We need to find out, according to some people. And so maybe that's a good topic for further research. Known locations of rare species and significant landscapes, and a lot of them are located, those are the red dots, a lot of them are located in the very areas where the sand resources are found. So this is really useful. This is another version of the map that I showed you earlier, and I'm going to zoom in on this a bit just to help us see these green areas. These are sites of biodiversity of the greens, and you can see how they in many places overlap with where the location of the sand resources are, the sand resources being the sort of yellow-golden color. So this is why a larger view of these topics is necessary, and individual minds here and there don't really give you the information you need for the larger picture. Native plant communities, there's data on that in the areas of where the sand resources are known to be. So presenting information that we know as well as what we don't know listed as potential research topics. Talking about potential for state government to help the local governments, one of the proposals here is a mapping project that would basically take all these data on a county-by-county basis and make them available in an interactive online format for the different county people. Expensive project, certainly a possibility if the funding is made available for that. That could be very useful for the counties, cities, townships, the planners out there. So that's what that is. And, you know, an example would be an accumulation of that sort of data for a county. And that's, you know, what's shown here. So, and then the chapter, this is actually chapter 11. This needs to be changed. That's a typo. Chapter 11 is taking all those potential research topics from the different chapters, putting them in one place. So if you just want to go and see, okay, what are they looking for to be for further investigation, they're all there in the one place. Beyond that, that goes on for a number of pages. Again, there's a number of them. Then we have the glossary that was asked for by the board in the when we reviewed the draft. Our folks over at the DNR, particularly Jill Townsend over at the DNR, really gave me a lot of help on this project, and she put together this glossary. Invaluable help from Jill. Not to say the other help wasn't invaluable, but in putting this document together, she really pulled my fat out of the fire, let's put it that way. We have a list of references, and then at the end, appendices, which include some of those biological sites broken out by county. You can see there's quite a good amount of acreage in each of these, in some of these counties for where these things are found. So that is the different keyboard. That's the report. Again, it's not supposed to be encyclopedic. It's not Wikipedia of silica sand. It's intended to show what we could find out, what we could list, and a long list of things of what merit additional research.
Thank you, Jeff. Questions for Jeff? Thank you so much for the hard work, you and your staff, and all of the agencies that participated in putting this report together. Thank you again.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I just wanted to say, yeah, I really appreciate the help of all the other agencies in helping pull this report together. One tends to underestimate the amount of work it is to pull it into one coherent form, though, and so I wanted to commend Jeff on his thankfully we have in Jeff a really good writer and editor and somebody who really can pull information together, so I just wanted to commend you for great work.
Thanks, Bob.
No questions? If not, thank you, Jeff. All right. Now we're at the right spot for testimony, and Eric, finally, welcome to the committee, Eric. Eric is here.
Yeah, we're just going to have all three of us. We just want to know.
Okay, excellent. Okay, come
Mr.
on.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Eric Bryan. I'm the director of marketing at Bryan Rock Products. per reason we were here, we just want to know if you guys have any questions. We want to let you guys know that we're engaged in what you guys are doing. And just want to know if you guys, you know, I'll let Scott talk now. And
sure, who he is. I'm Scott Sustacek, Chief Executive Officer of Jordan Sands, headquartered in Mankato.
Welcome to both of you. Glad you're here.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Stein.
Just would like to ask the members, Mr. Bryan or Mr. Sustacek, you've presumably had a chance to look at the report. Is there any fatal flaws, or how would you characterize the report from the industry? You operate in this business. What's your thought on what you've seen in the report from this, just from your initial reactions?
I can go first. A lot of what has been talked about has been Southeast Minnesota, and we are in, personally, ours is in Scott County, where mining has gone on now for, I believe we've been in there for 60 years in Scott County in the Shakopee area. We are in an industrial area. We're a mining site right now as it is. I think a lot of what has been got up there is things that, sure, I mean, we need to look at and as an industry. I think it's all just going to be worked out in a timely manner.
Thank you.
Mr. Commissioner, Commissioner Stein, I think today was the first day I'd seen the report, so I haven't really, other than skimming over it during the rest of the process here today. I think for members of the committee, we're in the middle of our environmental assessment worksheet process and going through that. I can tell you that what Mr. Smizer hit on in terms of, you know, the things that we see and the things that we hear from our communities, concern with water, certainly, concern with air, which again is why I think that we as a proposer have voluntarily put our project into air monitoring as part of the process. Just knowing that's a concern and knowing that your organization is looking for how do we get that data? How do we help you get that? I think the water piece, again, is significant, and I think, Mr. Smizer made the comment about fracking. That came up in one of our meetings in Mankato, too, and we assured them there was no oil, at least non-discoverable in Mankato so far. But I think there is, you know, there's certainly concern about water, and I think it's also not well known that just plain old aggregate and sand mining in the state is done in the water. You know, what's being proposed here will certainly, in a different format, is not new to the state. And so it's getting people understanding that and in the things that we're doing. And so I think that those are all important issues that need to continue to be brought to the forefront.
Thank you.
For the members of the board, we had a brief chat earlier, and the whole reason you're here is you've been up to the Capitol, you've been testifying and participating in the process at the state Capitol, and felt that it would be good to stop by our meeting, not necessarily to defend or to condemn the document that we have that we had in front of us. It was just to be here to be in the chair to answer some questions and offer a perspective from the industry, and so for your information, that's why you're here, right?
Thank you, yes.
And we appreciate that immensely.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Brian?
We have heard that this silica sand mining has been going on in Minnesota for 100-plus years. You just indicated that you've been in a mine location in Shakopee for 60 years. I believe in this report it indicated that approximately 40-some-odd percent of silica sand is used for bottles, for golf courses, for any variety of things. I don't recall all of it, what it said, but what are your customers saying about this controversy that's going on right now? Hydrofracking for oil is a relatively new phenomenon. They've been purchasing sand for a long time, I'm assuming at probably different prices than is occurring now that all of a sudden there's this controversy and run for hydrofracking. But what are your customers saying about this controversy who have been purchasing sand for decades?
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Knapstad, I think, you know, when Senator Schmidt's bill went through its first committee and that hit the headlines, I think people in Texas and other states thought that sand mining here was done. It's that kind of industry where things move pretty quickly and people are watching very closely. I think from our perspective as a project coming forward, just the controversy swirling around Minnesota right now about this and where it's going to end up make it a challenge. In fact, I related in testimony the other day, had a meeting with our banker, who's it's a Minnesota-based bank, and we're looking to them to say, hey, fund this project going forward. And they've got all kinds of questions about what's going to happen, what's the risk, you know, what's the taxes, what's going to happen to the business model. And I think the significant change really over the last 2 years that I've seen is that the gold rush is essentially over. And so if you had sand and could somehow get it to market, you could do fine. Today, what you're seeing happen with sand, and it's again because of the dominant position that Wisconsin has taken in supply, is that now it's about business models and it's about logistics, and so people are looking for those pieces of the puzzle. And so when they see things here in Minnesota that can impact the business model piece of this, and your ability to sustain your business, and this will be a commodity market, up or down, to be able to sustain in those down periods, it will be an increasingly a challenge to find investors that want to do business here.
Is this – I believe this report indicates Wisconsin, Illinois. I mean, there are several regions that mine sand. Is the same thing happening in those regions, or are these controversies unique to Minnesota?
I think right, Mr. Commissioner.
Please.
I think right now the challenge that we're seeing is primarily here. I mean, you certainly hear about things in Wisconsin and the environmental aspects of Wisconsin. But again, apparently the governor over there has come out and said this. You know, we're going to keep business as usual here. So I think our friends at Uniman the other day presented a tax table. There's a tax bill also coming through, I believe, the House. Presented a tax table, and the one proposed here in Minnesota is dollars versus pennies in other states, and it, you know, you can see how that creates a pretty significant business model disparity.
Mr. Chair, were you asking if we have put sand out in the market right now as it is? Because I know both of our companies right now, we are limestone producers, and underneath the sand we found out there was silica sand.
Okay, I guess I wasn't referencing your company. I was referencing the industry that
it's
been
okay. Just
produced
sure.
for a long time.
Yeah, I just want to make sure that you didn't think we were putting out sand right now. So,
Commissioner Stein?
Well, I just wanted to thank you both. I know you've put in a lot of time on behalf of the industry. I want to commend Mr. Larson, too. I know he's sitting there and it has actively engaged the industry in organizing itself to be prepared to answer questions just such as these. So we know it took extra effort and time and expense for you to do that. It's helpful, and we appreciate it. From an environmental regulatory agency such as ours, it is important to have a productive working relationship with the industry representatives, and we do appreciate your efforts to answer the questions, to be thinking forward about the ways that we could better resolve concerns about air and water pollution concerns. So that's been very helpful, and I just want to thank you.
Other questions or comments from the board? Any closing comments, Scott or Eric?
Eric, you want to close?
Who's the closer here? Well, thank you so much for taking the time to be here.
Yeah,
unless you have some.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I think that, you know, the things that have been brought up here have been very good. I think we're very much supporters of the proposer model and the proposer covering expenses of these. And I think we both are in models like that. You know, and I think not every RGU, and these are other things that we've been hearing along the way, but not every RGU feels as out of touch as others. And so you have like Le Sueur County, which just permitted a 1,000-acre mine by Uniman, which I think in that one mine is probably still eclipses all the other mines in the pipeline in Minnesota in terms of size.
So I might suggest that out of touch might be a little strong.
Well, could be. Could be.
You got the commissioners behind me. You?
But I think that we want everybody to the RGUs that want access to those technical committees to have them. Mm-hmm. And when I meant by that comment, what I meant is that they haven't seen mining in their area yet. Whereas in Mankato and in the areas where Brine Rock is, they're very familiar with mining and what's happening there. So it's getting those RGUs that want the help and need the help the ability to get to it. But we really support that proposer paid model because it also creates a barrier to entry of where projects that have to be valid to come forward, where projects like Great Plains Sands or Uniman's are made better through the environmental process by all the agencies that comment on them. You talked about Minnesota Proppants earlier. Certainly there were issues there that the agencies caught and addressed and put that project on the right path. So I think you have an environmental process today in this state that is certainly more stringent than our neighboring states, but also brings forward projects that are credible and can move forward. Or it kicks them out or they get redone. So we are very much in favor of getting those RGUs the resources that they need.
Excellent. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I know in Scott County, in our permitting process, we have funded the local and state agencies that have come out during the permitting process, and we feel that is working in Scott County and that the local government can do that.
Excellent. So.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Commissioner Stein?
Just the last point on the report, Mr. Chair. I know the report isn't I would consider it worthy of being referenced and published, not necessarily in a more bound form, but I'd like to just say I think the staff did a great job, especially in organizing it. So what I'd recommend that we do, that the board staff complete under Mr. Patton's direction, just appropriately reference the document so that it can be housed in libraries and used by anyone who has interest, so that we could distribute it and have its content referenced by others as credible as it is a report to the Environmental Quality Board. So that would be my sort of, I think we could declare this project over then, because the staff did the work that we asked them to do, and they can finish the job and go back to their the 100%, 110% jobs that they have elsewhere.
Sounds good. Without objection, we'll order that to be done, along with a videographer. All right. Our business is completed. Is there a motion to adjourn? There is. Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion carries. Thank you, board, and thank you, members of the public.